content of this program is for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the New York Times, Bloomberg Opinion, and the News and Observer. Before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we are going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. And on today's Armchair Traveler, we're going to begin with an article headlined, Fall Travel Trends. Have you heard of trip stacking? You will. This was written by Concepcion De Leon. The article appeared in the September 3, 2021 issue of the New York Times. After a summer in which travel accelerated rapidly, nearly reaching pre-pandemic numbers, fall is looking like the season of uncertainty. Increasing concern about the Delta variant, as well as a seasonal travel dip, have slowed bookings. Fear of the variant and the potential of changing regulations have prompted travelers to plan more cautiously. International trips are being pushed to 2022, with some people monitoring conditions week by week before booking. The European Union's announcement on Monday, August 30th, that it was removing the United States from its safe list of countries raises the question of whether European nations will reinstate restrictions. Seth Borko, a senior research analyst at Skift Research, an arm of the Skift Travel Trade publication, said that while he thinks some countries, especially those dependent on international tourism, will ignore the guidance, some travelers may still be dissuaded. The travel lists themselves reduce people's inclination to go to those destinations, he said. Joshua Bush, the chief executive officer of Avenue 2 Travel, a luxury travel agency based in Pennsylvania and New Jersey, said that as the virus continues to develop, the one thing to know for certain is that everything is going to be uncertain, that things can change at any time. Here is what to expect if you plan to travel this fall, and we'll go into various topics here. First being, booking a flexible ticket will be easier. Because of the uncertainty raised by the Delta variant, said Paula Twidell, the senior vice president of travel at AAA, travelers are adopting a wait-and-see approach, delaying bookings or opting for flexible tickets. Hopper, a travel booking app, has seen an increase in the use of its services that allow people to cancel or rebook flights free of charge. Purchases of its Cancel for Any Reason add-on have increased 54% over the past 12 weeks or so, and the number of people opting for its rebooking guarantee has grown by about 50% since early spring. Some airlines, like Delta and United, have reintroduced flexibility for basic economy passengers who would not normally be allowed to change their tickets. This was a hallmark of early pandemic travel, said Scott Keyes, the founder of Scott's Cheap Flights, a service that alerts subscribers to discounted airfares, adding that the reversal demonstrates the airline industry's understanding of people's skittishness in light of the Delta variant. Some luxury travelers are opting for what some people call trip stacking, or buying two trips over the same time period in case one of them falls through, said Mr. Bush, who has been offering this service. Many of his clients had been forced to cancel travel plans because of regulation changes during the pandemic. Booking two trips, he said, ensures that they wouldn't be left out in the cold without having any trip at all. Ultimately, they're going to take both of those trips, he said. It just matters which is the one that is going to be the most likely to come to fruition in October. For budget travelers thinking of trying this strategy, said Mr. Keyes, it's important that they come in clear-eyed about what happens to the ticket they don't use. Flyers are only entitled to a refund if the airline cancels the flight or there is a significant delay. If passengers cancel, airlines will typically offer travel vouchers for future use. The only exception, said Mr. Keyes, is if you book with miles, in which case you will get back your miles and any taxes and fees if you decide not to travel. You may have more room on the plane, but your rental car may cost more. Both domestic and international airfares are expected to drop this fall as demand drops, said Adit Damodaran, an economist and chief travel expert at Hopper. though flight prices do not seem to have been affected by the new EU travel guidelines so far. Mr. Damodaran said that if restrictions are put in place and demand declines, prices could drop further. I would say that the general theme going into the fall at the moment is kind of a return to the way that travel was in the spring, Mr. Damodaran said. What I mean by that is lower prices compared to the summer, and also a little bit more domestic travel compared to international travel. But prices are still high in other sectors, especially for hotels and car rentals. A recent survey by Skift Research found that 73% of respondents intended to take a road trip in 2020, and Mr. Borko said that the EU action will likely accelerate that trend. Because so many international destinations remain closed, what is open, there's such a high demand, Ms. Twidell said. If you're waiting for a last-minute booking or a last-minute deal, it's really not a good value proposition for you to do that, she said. Jasmine Jordan, 31, a singer-songwriter and marketer who lives in Seattle, said that she also now spends more on travel expenses that she considered unnecessary in the past, like traveler's insurance. During a recent trip to Mexico, she also opted for private transportation as opposed to shuttles to minimize her interaction with people outside her party. She finds herself paying more for the convenience and, I guess, security of just knowing you're in tighter spaces with really just your tight-knit people, she said. Traveling domestically? You'll have company. The spread of the Delta variant has made many would-be travelers wary of making international travel plans, both because of personal reservations and also out of concern that changing regulations will force them to cancel. The European Union, taking the United States off its safe list, for instance, raises uncertainty about whether European countries will change regulations when it comes to American visitors. But Mr. Borko said that even during the summer, while Europe was open, travelers were still inclined toward domestic tourism, a trend he expects to continue. I think what you see is in the data is when people become more fearful of the pandemic, of COVID, to the extent they're traveling, it tends to be more focused domestically than internationally, Mr. Keyes said. Mr. Damodaran of Hopper said that the international bookings have been going down month over month on that platform, while domestic bookings have remained stable. Part of that is the seasonality that we're seeing just going into the fall when travel normally falls off, he said, and the other part of that could be some impact from the Delta variant, making travelers more hesitant to book transatlantic travel. This unpredictability led Ms. Jordan, who had a trip planned to Italy this fall, to postpone it for next year. Though she and her friend, a nurse, were sure they wanted to go, they had not yet booked their flight. Normally, it would be way in advance, she said, but I think we're just slowly tiptoeing, kind of feeling out week to week. She ultimately decided that she didn't want to risk getting stuck in another country. The pandemic has changed her overall attitude toward travel, she said, making her more flexible to changes. In previous years, I would get so frustrated when things didn't happen exactly how I wanted to, she said. After this last year, I almost feel like I'm a new person. McKay Naglalama, a 33-year-old who works in business affairs for a record label in Los Angeles, also expressed reservations about booking international travel. I really don't want to go anywhere international until we kind of see how 2022 pans out, Ms. Naglalama said. Some foreign countries, their medical health infrastructures is not as good as here, she said, adding that she would hate to be stuck somewhere very far from home and not have access to medical care if I were to get sick. And the beach may be crowded. Many travelers are gravitating toward beach vacations in the Caribbean, Mexico, Central America, and Hawaii, which are close and provide an outdoor escape. Hawaii has been so overwhelmed by tourists amid rising coronavirus case numbers that Governor David Ige urged travelers to stay away in an August 23rd news conference. This is a trend that continues from last winter and spring when travelers gravitated more toward these places because of the stringent restrictions in place in Europe, for example, said Mr. Damodaran. Leah Avellino, 33, director of a mental well-being program at The Well, a wellness center in New York, has traveled quite a bit throughout the pandemic, primarily to places near the city. But this fall, she's taking her family to Costa Rica for a beach surf vacation, their first international trip since the pandemic. She said they got travel insurance in case they need to change or cancel the flight based on how the Delta variant affects the country, and she plans on keeping her young children masked. Though she has family in Europe, Ms. Avellino said she wanted to go somewhere closer to home for the family's first international trip and then see how that feels for our nervous systems. You still may not be able to rent a car. Businesses across the travel industry continue to struggle to rebuild their workforce, so services are still being cut back and limited. Car rental counters in airports have been condensed to include multiple brands, often operated by one or two agents, Ms. Twiddell said. Airlines have cut some routes, offering fewer nonstop flights. There also has been a shortage in rental cars, which Ms. Twiddell said may not resolve itself until 2022 because of a semiconductor chip shortage affecting the car rental company's ability to upgrade or add vehicles to their fleets. And airline companies are scrambling to hire more call center employees to reduce call wait times, which are now several hours for most airlines. Everyone's trying to get staff back in place because the demand just spiked and surged, Ms. Twiddell said. That's going to be the challenge for a little while, not only the hiring, but bringing the competency up to speed. JetBlue said in an email that it is currently working to hire and train 4,000 new crew members to meet increased demand and the added steps COVID travel mandates have created, like verifying test results and other health documents. And American Airlines said it is hiring hundreds of reservation agents to better support customers. Budget carriers are making a play for you. One area in which there appears to be growth is among the budget airlines, which have taken advantage of the shift toward leisure travel during the pandemic. Mr. Keyes said that while the number of available seat miles, which refers to available seats, are down across major airlines compared to before the pandemic, budget airlines have actually added seat miles. Spirit has 14% more than it did the same time 2 years ago, while Allegiant has 28% more. You see, the budget airlines really trying not only to bounce back quicker, but really make a play to gobble up market share away from these sort of legacy airlines, he said. They're seeing the travel landscape changing toward their sort of playing field. Budget airlines offer direct flights to popular vacation destinations and appeal to casual leisure travelers who are paying out of pocket. Legacy airlines, on the other hand, rely more heavily on business travel, which continues to lag, said Mr. Borco of Skift Research. Still, the budget airlines have not been immune to the challenges the industry is facing. Spirit Airlines, for instance, canceled hundreds of flights in August and has been struggling with cancellations for months. Taking young children? Think road trip. With vaccinations still unavailable for children under 12, families must calculate the risk of traveling with their young children. That's why there's a high propensity of road trips and domestic travel happening, Ms. Twiddell said. She encourages families to go places where they can have more control over their environments and limit the number of people with whom they interact, like national parks. That's the route that Dr. Amber Schmidtke, 40, and her family, who live in Kansas City, took during the pandemic. Over the summer, for example, she and her family packed up their camper and traveled for 3 weeks through Colorado and Utah. Camping, she said, is sort of pandemic proof. In March, after she and her husband got vaccinated, they booked a Labor Day trip to Hawaii with their children, 10 and 12, with another family with mixed vaccination status. We fully expected that there would be a pediatric vaccine by now, Dr. Schmidtke said, but a few weeks ago, as she saw cases rise in Hawaii, reflected on how the virus has disproportionately harmed people of color, including Native Hawaiians, she decided to cancel her trip. Dr. Schmidtke is particularly attuned to the spread of the Delta variant because of her work as COVID researchers at the University of St. Mary in Kansas. I may be a little more paranoid than some parents, she said, but especially with unvaccinated kids, it's just a risk that we weren't willing to take. She added that she didn't want to be responsible for any sort of outbreak in Hawaii. You really should be thinking about 2022. Bookings have already started to pick up for next year. Gemma Jameson, a spokeswoman for Skyscanner, a flight booking app, said in an email that bookings for 2022 created in the last week were up 30% compared to the same in July. The top bookings were to Cancun, London, Paris, Rome, and Tokyo, indicating a continued demand for travel worldwide. And that would have been, by the way, the week of August 30th. It's still too early to tell how these bookings will be affected by the European Union's action this week, but said Dia Adams, a travel expert at Forbes Advisor, "I do not think the top line will scare some European travelers off booking their trips." Mr. Borko said he anticipates a continued interest in domestic or regional travel to places such as Mexico and the Caribbean. "International travel is recovering very slowly and still very much below where we were," he said, "and the sentiment about COVID has turned much more sharply negative." Despite the continued challenges to the travel industry, Ms. Twardell said that she's optimistic about next year. 2019 was a banner year for travel, she said. 2022 could be an even bigger banner year than 2019. Wow. Lots to think about there, huh? Well, as we perused articles for this episode of Armchair Traveler, we came across a commentary co-authored by Lionel Loren and Sam Fazeli for Bloomberg Opinion. It appeared in the September 8, 2021 Opinion Extra section of the News and Observer, and it is headlined, "COVID Travel is Still a Disaster. It Doesn't Need to Be." The surreal nature of international travel in the COVID-19 era was beamed live around the world last weekend. That would have been the weekend of September 4th and 5th. In the opening minutes of a soccer match in Sao Paulo between Brazil and Argentina, play ground to a halt when public health officials walked onto the field to remove several Argentine athletes over an apparent breach of a 14-day quarantine, mandatory for travel via the UK. The game never resumed. 18 months into the pandemic, travel restrictions are still tripping up regular families and firms, not just footballers. U.S. ban on most travelers from 24 European countries, instituted by Donald Trump in March of last year, remains in place despite a change of president and the fact that a higher proportion of people in the European Union and the U.K. are fully vaccinated. Meanwhile, Hong Kong residents returning home from places, including the U.S. and France, must spend 21 days in hotel quarantine, even if they're vaccinated, and the city bars entry to most other people. Australia's borders are closed, with most international travel banned. Obviously, a caution is warranted around the Delta variant, but the lack of pragmatism around international travel is striking. Although many governments have eased restrictions on movement at home since recognizing the evidence that vaccines protect against severe forms of COVID-19, travel curbs appear to be preserved in cement. A July report by the World Tourism Organization found that there had been no significant changes in curbs since November 2020. For every bit of good news, Hong Kong and the United Arab Emirates recently eased travel restrictions, there's a snapback, such as the EU's reimposition of curbs on American travelers after a summer reprieve. This merits urgent attention. There are emotional and economic costs to restricting travel. Most visible is the tourism industry, which suffered its worst year on record in 2020. Losses may hit $2.4 trillion this year, according to the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development. Less visible are all the lives and careers that have been put on hold until travel resumes, from full-time workers and seasonal staff to international students with big future potential. One chief executive officer recently quit his post after tiring of transatlantic travel restrictions. The benefits, meanwhile, are hard to spot. Consider the treatment of travelers from France who recently, even if they were vaccinated, today they still have to book a COVID-19 test 2 days after arrival. All this to what end? The U.S. and U.K. are currently reporting around 500 new daily cases per million people, about twice that of France. Paris is deemed the most open city out of 40 destinations tracked by Bloomberg. Even New Zealand, with its high border control and location thousands of miles from anywhere, concedes that even with vaccines, infections will rise when its borders reopen due to variants like Delta. One alternative to travel bans and ineffectual rules would be to better differentiate between vaccinated and unvaccinated. As of June, only 17% of all travel destinations worldwide specifically mentioned vaccinated passengers in their travel policy, according to the World Tourism Organization. The research from airline lobby group IATA also finds that two-fifths of EU states aren't allowing in vaccinated travelers from countries deemed safe outside the bloc. For all the caveats on transmission and waning vaccine effectiveness, there should be more openness to the vaccination, to the vaccinated. Of course, this would mean that rich countries need to push harder to expand supply and production of vaccines in the developing world. Otherwise, those without access will be unfairly punished. The World Health Organization should also harmonize competing definitions of full vaccination to reduce confusion as countries roll out booster shots and third doses. More broadly, politicians need to start talking about travel as an opportunity, not just a risk. Wanting to avoid giving privileged holidaymakers license to spread disease is perhaps justified. Denying vaccinated families, students, and workers a chance at normality isn't. No relaxation of curbs is risk-free, but this has to be balanced against the progress we've made so far in managing COVID-19 and the reward of improving mobility. At this stage of the pandemic, with the tools at our disposal, a shift looks worth it. Again, that was some commentary from the Bloomberg Opinion Group, published by the News and Observer in its September issue, September 9th, 2021. Well, while the pandemic continues to make international travel iffy, as we have heard, there are many people who find solace in domestic travel. That prompted Neil Gladstone of Oyster.com to prepare a travel guide, The Best Small Towns in America. Now, this appeared in the August 17, 2021 e-edition extra of the News and Observer. While big cities may get mentioned more often in travel guides and on Instagram feeds, small towns offer distinctive opportunities to interact with history, navigate lesser-known pathways, and even post pictures to social media that everyone hasn't already seen. Here are some small towns, he actually has 12 here, most with population under 10,000, that are worth turning off the big highway to see. And we'll read as many as these as we can with the remaining time we have. We start with Avalon, California. The southernmost town in Los Angeles County, Avalon is a resort getaway on Catalina Island, 22 miles off the coast of California's mainland. Getting to the island by ferry will take about an hour from Long Beach, or if you're a high roller, 15 minutes by helicopter. Beaches and boating are the big draws to Avalon, which has a local population of about 3,700, but you can also go on underwater dives, fish, and play golf. Travelers hoping to relax more can check out the Botanic Gardens and Marine Reserve. There are also upscale restaurants, boutique shops, and top-shelf spas for those who are looking for a bit more glamour. Next is Dahlonega, Georgia. Many hikers come to Dahlonega at the foot of the Appalachian Mountains to rest up before beginning a stroll on the Appalachian Trail 8 miles away. Visitors who don't want to undertake the approximately 2,180-mile trek can enjoy a more relaxing saunter by one of the 8 waterfalls that are within a short drive from downtown. Dahlonega has first made a name for itself during the Georgia Gold Rush in 1829, and a museum recounts the miner's life, which was anything but glitzy. Still, as it's part of the North Georgia wine country, about 20 bettors produce bottles of vino in the area. You can easily get a sip of the good life. Number 3 is Marfa, Texas. With a population of just around 1,800, Marfa, a desert oasis in West Texas, is known for being an art hub. The art explosion launched in the 1970s when minimalist sculptor Donald Judd decamped New York for the wide-open dunes of Marfa, where he bought a one-time army base and filled it with his own work. The town now boasts a bustling contemporary art scene, spas, and even a Prada Marfa art installation. That's to say nothing of its cuisine, which ranges from casual Tex-Mex to continental-inspired dishes served in the local hipster hotel. Those who want to get a quick taste of the place should watch the series I Love Dick, which stars Kevin Bacon and is set in the stylish and dusty locale. Then we move on to a place called Maysville, Kentucky, with a population just under 9,000. Maysville is a bit bigger than the typical small town, but it has plenty of historic charm. Founded in part by frontiersman Daniel Boone, the Northeast Kentucky outpost was once an important producer of bourbon and tobacco. The town's location, just across the river from the Free State of Ohio, made it a final stop before freedom for many runaway slaves. These days, you can stop by the National Underground Railroad Museum. The town also makes great use of its vantage buildings. The 1886 Romanesque Cox Building, is utilized for special events, and the 1930 Russell Theater continues to show movies. Maysville even has a bit of Hollywood glamour, as it's the former home of singer-actress Rosemary Clooney and TV host Nick Clooney, which is George Clooney's father. Then we have Breckenridge, Colorado. Founded in 1859, the town of Breckenridge was named after the 14th Vice President John C. Breckenridge, with hopes of inspiring the U.S. government to give the place a post office. It worked. Now the town of approximately 5,000 is known as a ski destination in the winter and a hiking haven in summer. Breckenridge is situated at the base of the 10-mile range and boasts a mountain that has one of the country's highest summit elevations, approximately 13,000 feet. When the town isn't covered in snow, there are numerous paths for hiking and biking, plus plenty of wide open space for golfing and fishing. For those who want to stick closer to town, the main street is lined with Victorian architecture and clapboard buildings, many of which date back to Breckenridge's early days as a mining town. Number 6 is Mooresville, Alabama. Located between Huntsville and Decatur, Mooresville, Alabama has a population of about 80 people. The well-preserved 19th-century town is listed on the National Register of Historic Places and boasts several beautiful specimens of classic American architecture. Mooresville's 1840 post office is the oldest operating mail carrier in Alabama, and the 1839 Old Brick Church is available for weddings. Then we have Leavenworth, Washington. In the mid-1960s, the citizens of Leavenworth, Washington, decided to transform their struggling logging town into a Bavarian vacation town, German beer, Swiss music, and plenty of lederhosen included. Sure, it's a bit of a gimmick, but you have to give the 2,350-plus Leavenworth natives props for pulling it off. Building on the main street are redone with Tudor-style facing. Oktoberfest and Christmas are both celebrated with numerous festivities. Plus, the Leavenworth Nutcracker Museum has over 7,000 pieces. In addition to enjoying the imported European culture, visitors can go mountain biking, horseback riding, rafting, hiking, and fishing. Then we have Ketchum, Idaho. Now, the reasons Ernest Hemingway loved Ketchum may also be why you'll want to stop by the central Idaho town, which boasts a population of around 2,800. Bordering town Sun Valley was built up in the 1930s as the nation's first destination ski resort, and in the mid-20th century it hosted Hollywood stars such as Clark Gable, Marilyn Monroe, and Errol Flynn. More recent guests have included Tom Hanks, Oprah Winfrey, and Justin Timberlake. Beyond the slopes, Ketchum has the Sawtooth Wilderness, a federally protected area with some of the cleanest air in the United States, according to the EPA. Canoers can glide along Redfish Outlet Lake and stop the fish. During your visit, head to the Sun Valley Ketchum Visitor Center for an in-depth exhibit on Hemingway's time living in the area. You can also visit his memorial, which was created by his family. Number 9 is Galena, Illinois. When Galena was in the midst of a mining rush in 1828, it had a population of about 10,000 and was a destination on the Mississippi River. Now its population of 3,600 is dwarfed by the big city, but the echoes of Victorian grandeur continue to shine. Once the home of President Ulysses Grant, Galena has numerous 19th-century sites and a main street dotted with several turn-of-the-century buildings. And then we have the final cities, which we don't have time to read the details, but they are Stowe, Vermont, and Cloudcraft, New Mexico, and Clarksdale, Mississippi. So that rounds out the list, and that closes out this episode of Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed it, and that you'll be with us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, reminding you the content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments and questions can be directed to 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.